Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday. This, live in Los Angeles, is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1 1 hour from now. I think it's the best 15 minutes in American sports radio. Greg Cosell, NFL Meat Sandwich. You're a gambler, you play fantasy football, or you just love the game. He'll give you tidbits, little pieces of information you don't get anywhere else. And Joy Taylor is joining me. The coffee this morning is delicious. I woke up at 2:45. I never went back to sleep, so I need a little extra caffeine this morning. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Isn't that the worst?
I went to bed so early.
What time did you go to bed?
8:20. I mean, come on. I watched the Clippers-Lakers for a I watched the Clippers-Celtics for a half and then fell asleep. I mean, what's happening to me?
Oh, you missed the good part.
I know. I missed the best part. So tonight is not just a football game. Tonight is why that quarterback for Alabama, Tua, that got hurt, is not going to drop in the draft. He's not going to drop in the draft. And tonight is why. Indianapolis does everything right. Their GM, Chris Ballard, is brilliant. Their coach, Frank Reich, is excellent. Their offensive line is the best young O-line in years in the NFL. It's like the Cowboys 4 years ago. Their defense, they get draft picks, they steal guys, free agent, they're smart. They do everything well. The cap, they develop players. And tonight, I'll take Houston because Houston has a great quarterback. Their offensive line's a work in progress. They don't actually have a GM. Their head coach, Bill O'Brien, can be good at times, but I'm not sure he understands how clocks work. Situationally, they can be an absolute tire fire, but they have Deshaun Watson. And that is why Tua is not dropping in the draft. You can do virtually everything wrong, but I got Deshaun Watson, and you got Jacoby Brissett. I'll take Deshaun Watson. I think there's going to be a bidding war for Tua. And tonight's why. Because you're going to watch that game tonight. And you know in the AFC, and these teams are in the AFC, the winner tonight takes control of the AFC. South. And do you know that since 2003, the last 16 years in the AFC, four quarterbacks have gotten to the Super Bowl? Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Big Ben, and 1 year Joe Flacco got ridiculously hot. Four quarterbacks, but mostly three. Hall of Famers. And in the next 6 weeks in the NFL, you're going to see guys like Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson and Drew Brees and Tom Brady and Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson separate because they're special. And special is what wins right before Thanksgiving up until February. And Indianapolis does everything right. They just don't have the right quarterback. I like Jacoby Brissett. He's fine. They had the right quarterback, and then that quarterback retired. And then they got a guy they signed for 2 years who's very solid. I'm not denying he's a franchise guy, but he's not special. Doesn't have special mobility, doesn't have a special arm. He's good, fine. He had a lot of Kirk Cousins there. Got to surround him with perfect stuff. But when you watch tonight, I want you to watch very carefully on a team that is brilliantly run, shrewdly developed, does virtually everything right, against a team that does not have a general manager, O-line's a work in progress, and we don't know if Bill O'Brien was given a watch as a kid because he can't figure out clock management. And I'll take Houston. And that leads me to my second story. I read a story this morning. I don't want to call out the network, CBS, but it was a ridiculous story. I don't want to call out the writer. Okay, I won't. That Tua is going to go 32nd in the first round. Oh, that's adorable. No, starting today, I'm going to play a game, and we're going to call it Hua Gets Tua. He ain't going past six, folks. Hua Gets Tua. And let me explain how this works. In the National Football League today, I am going to list the quarterbacks who lead their division. Tom Brady, Lamar Jackson, after tonight, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Dak Prescott, who is having an MVP-level year, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, and Jimmy Garoppolo. See a trend here? It's not the best O-line, not the best pass rush, not the best running game. No. This is a copycat league. Russell Wilson probably wins the MVP. Lamar Jackson wins it if he doesn't. Kyler Murray is outrageously good and shockingly effective. I'm going to make a prediction. There's going to be a bidding war for Tua. Okay? But because of his injuries, he probably doesn't go one to Cincinnati, and he probably doesn't go three or four to Miami. But never forget this. In 2018, five quarterbacks were drafted in the first round. Four of the five teams moved up to get them. In 2017, three quarterbacks were taken in the first round. All the teams moved up to get them. In 2016, there were three quarterbacks taken. And all three teams moved up to get him. And you're going to tell me Tua, who Nick Saban gets misty over, who Trent Dilfer calls the best prospect we've had in years, is going to drop to 32. I've read three columns today. Drop, 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 drop. I'm going to go the exact opposite of everybody I've read in the American media. There'll be a bidding war, and whoever has the number four or five spot, and today that's the Jets. I don't think they'll end up with a five. They could. I mean, I think they'll win a couple games. Whoever has number five is going to have a ton of power. If the New York Jets end at number five, they could call Carolina, they can call the Chargers, they can call any of these teams that have really good players and draft capital and make strong demands. We'll take boom, 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 boom. You give us your first round pick. But this morning I went and looked at the NFL draft order and I counted 11 teams that either urgently need a quarterback or that I think would strongly consider drafting it. Cincinnati, urgent need. Miami at four. Urgent need. Denver at six, more urgent than they'd acknowledge need. Tampa at seven, they're moving off Jameson. They had drafted a quarterback. Chargers at 11, they're moving to a new stadium. They can't sell tickets. Old, unathletic quarterbacks do not work anymore. Tennessee at 15, really think Ryan Tannehill's the future? Carolina at 16, Kyle Allen has been exposed. He's a nice transitional in-season quarterback. Minnesota at 23. You bring in Tua for a year behind Kirk Cousins. Make sure he's totally healthy, learns the system, and then he spends the rest of his next 6 years handing off to Dalvin Cook and throwing to Stephon Diggs. Indianapolis at 26. You think they gave Jacoby Brissett a two-year deal because he's the future? New Orleans at 29. Well, Drew Brees is 40, and Teddy Bridgewater is going to go on the open market and get a lot of lettuce. And New England at 32. Yes. Yes, they're going to draft a quarterback, first or second pick. That's 11 teams. There may be another one, but I gave it thought, 11. And you think Tua's just dropping and dropping and dropping because he got a leg injury? Not happening. I'll go the exact opposite way. Once again, starting today, our new game, we'll probably do it once a week. Hua gets Tua. This morning, the Jets have the fifth pick, which is incredible leverage in this NFL draft in April. There we go. You know how I am with drafts, Joy. I get zany.
Oh, I was going to say you're a huge draft nerd.
Nerd. Gigantic nerd. Of many nerdy tendencies.
That's like another...
I have
mock... That's like me taking chess classes, nerd.
I have mock draft parties. Literally, come on over, wear sweaters, have some soup, and do mock draft parties. that's where we stand.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Magic Johnson, great player, used to run the Lakers briefly, and now he just talks and he's on Twitter and stuff and stops by TV shows. He was talking about LeBron James yesterday and about how, he's going to be the MVP of the league. The numbers are outrageous. Now, I think James Harden is scoring so much, he'll get a lot of votes, but I think the fact that LeBron is changing positions positions in year 17, I almost feel like the voters will feel like they're obligated to give LeBron James the award. We know James Harden can score. He's not doing anything he hasn't done before. LeBron is doing something he's never done before, and Magic came out and he said, 25-11, this is an MVP season. Nobody's playing better than what scary is. His story is still being written, and I think that's an interesting line by Magic. The story on LeBron is being written. Year 17, change positions and be the best in the NBA at that. Let's not get into the MVP award. That is not what this rant's about. I mean, Michael Jordan, how many MVPs does he have in the regular season? Nobody cares. With Michael, it's 6-for-6 in the finals. The number that matters, 6. And the other number that matters is 6. 6-for-6. Let's not waste the Michael Jordan-LeBron argument. But this would definitively enhance what LeBron's always been, is the greatest, most versatile Swiss Army knife in league history. You would never, Michael may be the more relentless offensive player and better player. I'm not disputing that. But you didn't see, Michael was not capable in year 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 of being the best player at forward. It's just forget it. And I know the league is easier now and the nutrition is better, but to change positions and dominate it in a league full of all-time great guards really puts Magic Johnson, who I've always considered very close to Michael and LeBron, we freaked out when Magic played center for one game in the 1980 finals. We freaked out. Kareem got hurt. He had to step in against the Sixers and Caldwell Jones. Oh, my God! LeBron's 17th year. I'll do it for the season and win MVP and be the best at it in a guard-driven league. I think it will clearly put Michael LeBron, best ever, no Kareem, no Wilt, no Russell, no Kobe, no Magic, no Bird, the most relentless player and the most versatile player that we wrote a new chapter into the book in year 17. You can't say that with any other player ever. You can't say it with Kareem, Magic, Michael. You just can't say it. It's an incredible ability. And it's like comparing Michael and LeBron has always been sort of like comparing Beyonce and Bruce Springsteen. Like, they're both great. It's kind of a different genre thing. Like, different size for LeBron and different position for LeBron and really different skill set. And Michael's more the relentless scorer. And Michael, but I mean, to do the point guard thing to me is just, it's remarkable. And I think it's an incredibly difficult position to play in basketball. You have to be the brains. You have to be the coach. While you're playing at 100 miles an hour, you have to be the decision maker. It's hard in college. It's hard in high school. It's absurd in the NBA. You have to often guard their best player, James Harden or Steph Curry. So I don't care about the MVP thing, but what I'm watching right now, it is crazy. It is just insane by LeBron.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I want to bring this up. I saw this yesterday. A couple days ago, Antonio Brown apologized to Robert Kraft. Mm-hmm. Bill Belichick yesterday referenced him. Don't ask me about AB. Go ask Mr. Kraft. I do think they may consider, if AB gets cleared, not saying he's going to, I think they would consider going after AB and giving him a second shot in New England, because I think New England's offense is lacks a vertical threat. I think you can all see it. I can see it. You saw it against Philadelphia. They had to go to a trick play with Julian Edelman throwing a touchdown to win it. I also think AB's not somebody I would trust. Sometimes I think he appears very unstable. But this is an organization that has rolled the dice multiple times and has it's worked multiple times. I would say this, though, is that every single dynasty has a hole. Alabama's dynasty, the hole is Nick Saban wears out assistant coaches and they leave quickly, and he's constantly having to replace great assistants. Golden State dynasty, the hole. A couple of their stars were really fragile. Steph and KD get hurt a lot. New England's hole in their dynasty, they do a lousy job at drafting and developing college receivers. They're not very good at it. They're better at getting Wes Welker, Randy Moss, Josh Gordon, Chris Hogan. They're better at that. That's what they do really well. They're very good at scouting the pro game. I've showed you this before. Draft picks since 2003, that's a lot of whiffs. And there are a lot of guys drafted in the second and third round, and they are complete and utter whiffs. They just don't do this. It's the hole in the dynasty. So you go get a Josh Gordon, a Chris Hogan, a Wes Welker, a Randy Moss, and a B. And by the way, they just went and got Mohamed Sanu. And within an hour, he's got like 10 targets. Mohamed Sanu's the perfect Patriot. Smart, coachable, fits in, veteran, Tom Brady. But I would say this. Tom Brady deserves a little heat on this. Tom is rigid and precise, and he appears to trust veteran guys much more than new guys. I mean, good luck. Every single receiver works for Russell Wilson 5 minutes after they arrive in Seattle. Everybody works with Russell Wilson, and they all work instantly. Seemingly nobody works with Tom Brady out of college, regardless of if they're a first, second, or a third round pick. N'Keal Harry, I thought he was great in college. I thought he reminded me of Anquan Boldin. He finally played last week, couple of sniffs. So it's the hole in their dynasty. I think that's why the AB story won't go away. And by the way, Brady has acknowledged this, that young players, it's not his job to babysit them.
I mean, we've had a lot of, you know, young players over the years try to come into our offense. It's a challenging position because there's a lot that's put on receivers. You know, young players, it's hard to count on. There's been not a lot of young players that have had major contributions in our offense. That's just the reality of that position. We have, I think, a high level of communication, high level of detail, and I think sometimes it takes guys a few years to understand that.
Yeah, a few years, or they don't work at all, and we've seen a lot of that. All right, 40 years in the business. If you gamble on football, you play fantasy football, or you just want the smartest guy who breaks down stuff as objectively as anybody can, it's Greg Cosell. So let's go to Deshaun Watson. Let's talk about that, because I thought that was I think he's a very poised player. I thought he lacked composure. I thought he played poorly. What did the tape say?
He did play poorly, and in fact, I thought it was arguably one of his worst games. And it started with that sack forced fumble on the first series. And the thing that immediately stood out to me on that play is when he took the snap from center, he drifted right into the pass rush. And then because he himself caused the pressure, in order to avoid the pressure, instead of just sliding back to his right, because he had Hopkins wide open on the dig, he ran to his right, and he made the play frenetic. So that started early in the game, and he played that way for much of that game. So it was just one of those games where he played poorly. I would expect he'll play much, much better tonight.
I want to go to another young player. We haven't talked a lot about him. You know my affection for him, Sam Darnold. I do not like the Jets' offensive line. Le'Veon Bell can't find crevices either. But I do think in the last 2 to 3 games, he's more settled. He's more measured. Now, he'll uncork an egregiously bad throw every weekend. But I think the last 2 or 3 weeks, there's been some progress. At least that's what my eyes tell me. They play the Raiders this week. What have you seen?
Well, I think Darnold's a fascinating watch because I would say overall that his style is there's not a lot of rhythm or comfort to his game. He often has the look of a quarterback who's playing fast. And he's a very odd guy in this sense, Colin. His feet in the pocket look heavy, but his feet look lighter when he's out of the pocket on the move.
Fascinating.
And that's very rare for a quarterback. So I think there's good things to like. He's an awkward thrower. His eyes and feet don't work together particularly well. There's too many throws where he does not step to his throw, yet he can make throws when he does that. I think in the last couple of weeks, there's been a little better meshing between Darnold and Adam Gase, and there's been some well-designed plays that have worked very effectively. So I think that will continue to get better, but I always find him an interesting evaluation for me, even going back to his days at USC.
What's the Russell Westbrook thing? Russell Westbrook's a great athlete, but was he ever a great point guard? Sam Darnold's a great athlete. Is he a great natural thrower of the football and a great quarterback? There are guys.
Correct.
Sam, to me, is just an athlete who makes stuff happen, but he can be inartistic. He can be inelegant sometimes when you watch him play.
And those are two good words to describe him. I still think he must become a little more decisive in eliminating what's not there and isolating what is there within the structure of the play call. And then I think he'll become a better player, because you can't live off outside of structure plays.
One of the games that's getting overlooked, we all know New England, Dallas is big, and we know San Francisco, Green Bay is. Lost in that is the Rams, Baltimore on Monday. And it's interesting. I just looked at a line out of Vegas in the spread is 3, and I thought, boy, Baltimore, my eyes tell me Baltimore has a real identity, and the Rams kind of appeared to find theirs a little last week. So let's address the elephant in the room, Todd Gurley. He looked pretty good. They kind of feel like they're back to being what they kind of want to be. I mean, did you take anything from that Rams win over Chicago?
The only thing we don't know is if that game necessity was the mother of invention, because they did not have Cooks and Woods. So what they did in that game, which they have not done under Sean McVay, is they had 34 snaps where they had two tight ends on the field. And in their previous 9 games, they only had 65 snaps total with two tight ends on the field. So they lined up with two tight ends, and they ran Gurley. And that's what they did in that game. He had 25 carries. But I must admit, watching Gurley, and this is watching the tape, I think at this point, and maybe it's injury, he's a straight line, stiff downhill runner. He's got very little wiggle.
Yes.
Not much lateral agility. He doesn't have the burst he used to have. There's no more explosive violence to his running where he breaks tackles.
This is what Joy and I said. He's good, but the juice, the wiggle, it's gone. This is what he is. And by the way, you're paying him, so give him his 18 to 20 tackles. By the way, let's segue to a team where I think they'll be in the playoff chase for another 5 or 6 weeks. But when DeSean Jackson left the Eagles, so did all their speed. You called it. They're flat.
They're
slow and they're flat. And I think you've been ahead of this. You just kind of think they're a draft away from getting faster and more competitive.
They need Alabama's receivers. And Wentz did not play well this week. There's no margin for error at all with their offense. Zach Ertz is a very good tight end, but not the kind of tight end who can be your number one weapon, because there's not a vertical element to his game.
Right.
So there's no margin for error on offense. They did not run the ball particularly well. They had one long drive, and they only had one play in that drive, I believe, over 10 yards, and that's a very hard thing to do in the NFL. And the one play over 10 yards was a 21-yard screen to Goddard. But they are a very slow offense. Their trio of receivers, even when Jeffrey comes back this week, is still bottom third, maybe bottom 2 or 3 in the NFL. And I think they're the players they have and the quarterback don't mix.
Yeah.
Because Wentz is not a pinpoint Drew Brees type player. He's much more of, let's say, and I'm not, you know, I'm talking stylistically.
Right.
You know, I don't want people to think, oh, you're comparing him to a Hall of Famer. Wentz is much more, I think, of a Brett Favre mentality.
Yes,
type player.
I totally agree. Yes. Yeah,
and so I don't think that goes together.
Let's shift to the Cowboys and New England.
Speaking of weapons, the Cowboys are in the top 2 or 3 in the league.
How does their offense match up against what appears to be the best secondary and the best defensive mind? How does the Cowboys' offense match up against New England to you?
It's going to be fascinating, because let's assume Cooper health. We don't know that, but let's assume. Their trio of wide receivers is as good as there is in the league.
Yes, yes.
And then say what you want about Zeke. I know the last 2 or 3 weeks the numbers haven't been big, but I don't think we're going to say he's not a great player. So they have everything. Now, Collins will be out, but they still have a very good D-line, O-line. Prescott's pristine in the pocket most of the time. It's a really good offense. So I don't think that Belichick will dramatically change his approach. I don't think all of a sudden you'll see high-percentage zone. They do play a lot of man. The question is, who does Gilmore match up to? Because there's different ways to do this. You can match up to the number one, or you can match up to the number two and double the number one. You know, there's many ways to go about playing. You can do combination coverages. Does he increase his blitz frequency depending on the situation? To try to get into Belichick's head, hey, I'm not going to presume I know what he's going to do, but this, to me, this unit matchup is the most fascinating unit matchup of the weekend.
Good stuff. Now let's talk about the Patriots offense. We know Gronk...
Not very good.
No. Now, it's customary to blame the quarterback. Like when the Rams struggled, it's all Goff. But I will say this about the Patriots' left tackle. It's not good. It's a problem. That seems to me, I thought Tom was very frenetic. He wanted the ball out quickly. Yep. It was in his head, not seeing ghosts, but hearing something. What do you make of their offense and the problems that persist?
Well, without being in Brady's head, I think he's playing as if he does not trust his protection.
Yes.
Because I think that he's starting to play a little fast at times. He's getting the ball out even quicker than he normally does. He's been inaccurate on throws that he's normally not inaccurate on. Really, at this point, and we don't know what N'Keal Harry is yet, at this point, I think Edelman is the only receiver he feels really good about. And Sanu might not even go this week, and he's still new within that offense. The big difference is they're not running the ball. People forget, because it's Tom Brady, and he deserves all the credit people give him for obvious reasons, but people forget they ran the ball down the stretch last year.
Yes.
They lined up with a fullback in Devlin, who's out, and they ran the ball out of two back sets. And that was the foundation of what they did down the stretch the last 7, 8, 9 games. They have not been able to do that this year.
Yeah. No, I think people are just forgetting that this is not Brady's getting old. Kicker, left tackle, Gronk, they don't have special athletes. I think you're really right on this. I think Edelman's the one guy Tom feels comfortable with, and it ends after that. So let's go to San Francisco, Green Bay. You know, it's funny. Aaron Rodgers will get the press. Aaron Jones may be the most important player for the Packers, because I do think you can at times run against San Francisco. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about this game. Now, Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray twice in the last 3 weeks have given San Francisco's defensive line a little pause. Do you think Aaron has that same kind of nimble ability to make the defensive line for the 49ers slow down a bit?
At times, but I think they'll start with the run game, because I think that Matt LaFleur's approach. And I think that the way Jones and Williams have been playing is a 1-2 punch. They feel pretty good about their ability to run the ball and work off that. And as we've discussed, I think that Aaron Rodgers has bought in quite a bit, because the record obviously is good, and that he's playing much more within the structure of the offense. And they're going to play a team that likes to play with a single high safety, although this past week they played a lot out of split safety. But if he gets Adams one-on-one, whether it's against Sherman or it might be Witherspoon being back this week, I think he's going to take his shots to Adams. But I think that they'll try to run the football as a starting point of their offense.
Now, George Kittle, who is kind of Gronk-esque for San Francisco, don't feel like they have quite the offensive identity without George. Your play of the week involves Jimmy Garoppolo, who, again, sometimes I'll make a throw I wince at, but I think overall I like him. I think he's got confidence. He plays with a little swagger. So what's our play of the week?
Well, let's just gummy prologue it real quick. The Cardinals went what we call zero blitz on 2nd and 7, just outside the red zone, almost the same spot of the field of my big play, with 4:47 remaining in the fourth quarter. So now that was on tape. The 49ers knew that. So now we get to this play, and it's later in the fourth quarter, okay. Obviously, okay? So let's just run the play.
Okay.
And we're going to run the play here, and we're going to see that it's going to be a touchdown to Wilson. And this was actually a really interesting play. So we're going to see Wilson catch this, and it's going to be a touchdown. But what happened here, and it's interesting, Wilson was in the game here and not one of their other backs. So as we take a look at this, you're going to see that Garoppolo is in the shotgun.
Yep.
Now, Wilson is going to be next to him as the offset back.
Yep.
Now, right now, it looks like there's a single high safety in the middle of the field.
Jalen Thompson.
Thompson looks like that's what the coverage is. But this is going to be different. You see these three players now, they're all going to blitz. And this is not a double A-gap blitz. It will be a triple A-gap blitz. Three defenders attacking the A-gap. You can't block that. Certainly not if you release your back and the back released into a route. So this cannot be blocked. Now, we're going to go back to the snap of the ball, because we want to go back to the single high safety. He's going to vacate the middle of the field. There's the single high safety. Now, he's no longer going to be there. He's going to vacate the middle, because he's going to be part of man-to-man coverage on the trips side of the offense. So this is going to be zero blitz. Wilson now is the offset back, is going to be covered by Chandler Jones. That's obviously a mismatch, but they're hoping that the pressure will get there. Now, the Niners saw the same concept, as I said, 3-4 minutes earlier in the game. So now you see Wilson run his angle route,
boom,
beats Chandler Jones. It's a touchdown. Really smart play call. I don't want to say they knew this was coming, but there's, I'm sure, an anticipation that you're going to get that because you had seen it from the exact spot on the field a couple of minutes earlier in the game.
And by the way, when it happens, Garoppolo has less than 0.2 seconds. If he doesn't make that read, he's going to get smoked and be on his back because that got really close. Boy, that is that. You talk about precision in the NFL. You got to make that read. Boom, 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 throw, touchdown. Greg Cosell, 40 years NFL Films. Love having you on, Greg. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Colin. Thank you.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I thought this was an interesting quote. Michael Bennett played for the Seahawks, then the Patriots, then Dallas went and got him. Michael's had, you know, he's been polarizing in the news a lot. Martellus Bennett, his brother, super talented. He said, Bill Belichick is a savant who taught me a lot about football. And it's interesting because the coach that Michael used to play for, he's calling a savant. The coach Michael Bennett now plays for, Jason Garrett's never been called a savant. Here's Michael Bennett talking about his brief time with Belichick in New England.
I learned a lot of football in New England. I think at the same time, I think as a player, you go into the situation and you think you know football, and then you meet somebody who's above you and knows everything about the game. For me, I learned a lot about football in that situation, learning how to execute at a high level, learn what it takes to develop players, or learn what it feels like to, you know, break down game planning from a different perspective. And I think it was good for me as a player. You know, if I ever wanted to be a coach, it'd be a good situation to take you into that.
First of all, Michael's always been a bright guy. That's a pretty cool thing to say, to break it down like that. But I looked at the line this week in this game, and I've said this to Joy, it should not be 6.5. It doesn't make any sense. Foxborough's worth 3. Quarterback, Dak right now is playing better than Brady. That's not disputable. I'm a Brady guy. Dak's playing better. Weapons, not close, Dallas. Offensive line, not close, Dallas. Running back, Dallas. Linebacker, Dallas. Kicker, Dallas. Tight end, Dallas. Edge rusher, Dallas. Secondary, New England. That line is a Belichick line. That is a Belichick line. 3 points for home field, 3 points to 4 points due to Belichick. And that's why I said, I think if Jason Garrett loses, he's in big trouble. That line makes no sense. It makes no sense. New England has no vertical threat, doesn't have a tight end, struggles at left tackle. Sony Michel doesn't feel the same. Brady's 42. Dallas's star players are having star years, and it's a 6.5-point line.
They haven't lost there in 20 games.
6.5? That is... So we're going to play the Herd hot seat today. So where is Jason Garrett? Where is Jason Garrett in terms of heat if he loses to New England? Here we go.
The Herd Hot Seat. Colin explains which NFL head coaches are feeling the heat using his favorite thing in the world.
Fire!
Fire emojis.
All right.
They're very useful. All right. So I'll give you the name of a coach. And since you love fire emojis, you can give me a scale of 1 to 5 flame emojis, how hot the seat is for these coaches. Freddie Kitchens.
I think it's a 5. I think a lot of people thought he wasn't ready for the job. They're 4-6. I also think they lead in penalty yards. I think the word is out there. You've seen several reports. People feel like situationally, Freddie's kind of learning on the job. So I'd say he's a 5 emoji.
Anthony Lynn.
I'd say 2. Okay, remember, this is his third year. And he's been very successful. Last year he went 12-4, the year before 9-7. And I also think because Phillip Rivers has thrown so many picks, the onus is on Phillip. It'd be one thing if Phillip was having an MVP year. Phillip has regressed. They had the Melvin Gordon situation. They had the Derwin James injury. So I think there's a little heat, but it is just burning embers. It's 2.
Bill O'Brien.
Again, I'm going to go 2. Most people think it's higher, but remember, he's been there for 6 years. He's only had one losing season. And people have always said the GM situation was toxic. So he went out, he went and got running backs and a left tackle. So I think they're going to give him the rest of this year. I also think with Deshaun Watson, they're going to win the division. Really hard to fire a guy that keeps winning his division. He's only had one losing season.
Ron Rivera.
Again, new owner, 3 emojis. So 3 burn emoji. New owner, less patient, Never had back-to-back winning seasons. You can say it's Cam, but that's not... I mean, you got a new owner, and this guy's never had back-to-back winning seasons. There's a little... New owners change the temperature in the room. You go from 2 to 3 emojis.
Dan Quinn.
This is a 5-alarm fire. Arthur Blank has been very patient. By the way, since the Super Bowl year, their win total has gone down every year since 2016. 11-10-7-3. They have a sub-500 record since the Super Bowl, and Kyle Shanahan leaves,
right,
who we all acknowledge is a great coach, and it feels like Kyle Shanahan was a bigger part of his early success than maybe Dan Quinn.
Matt Nagy.
See, I think he's only a two-flame guy. First of all, he won Coach of the Year last year. And again, much like Anthony Lynn and Phillip Rivers, I think people say you can't win with Mitch Trubisky. Minnesota's right. Really good. Green Bay's really good. Detroit's probably the best fourth-place team, arguably, in the NFL. So I think Matt Nagy gets off the hook. Trubisky gets him off the hook, too.
Yeah, I agree. Matt Patricia.
I would say only two. Now, it could easily be three because I don't trust Detroit's front office and ownership. But in the end, Matt Stafford got hurt. And the minute Matt Stafford got hurt, and he's got some impressive wins. He beat Belichick. There are a couple of wins in here. You're like, okay. Matt Stafford's injury keeps him from 3 to 2.
Pat Shurmur.
Now, I think Pat Shurmur's at 3. The Mara family is patient. This could easily be 4. They start slowly. They just lost to the Jets. Okay, and the Jets are considered a total rebuild and the Jets in their building with Amara standing there up in the box beat him. I think he went from 2 to 3. They're 2-8 on the year, and frankly, there are times they have looked completely not ready to play in the first half of football games.
And finally, Jason Garrett.
I think it's 4. If they lose to New England, I think it's 4. 10 years, never made an NFC championship game. 6-4 on the season. His contract, by the way, is up. It is a clean break. Lincoln Riley's down the road. You've got two college coaches, Matt Rhule at Baylor and Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. Jerry will go to the college ranks. He went to the college ranks with Jimmy. Jerry's not somebody that's afraid of the college ranks. Jason Garrett loses Sunday when he has a better O-line, better quarterback currently, better weapons, better linebackers, better edge rusher, better kicker. I think it's tough. I think it's a tough spot for Jason Garrett, the Herd hot seat.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Last week I had my college football picks. Not going to lie, I did pretty well. People are talking about it. So what is the point of slowing down? Let's do it. All our odds provided by FoxBet. Here we go.
Ready to make some sweet cash? Colin's going to give you his 3 sure bets for the college football weekend. It's time for Colin's Marquee 3. Penn State at Ohio State.
I'm going to take Penn State plus 19 to keep it relatively close. The last 3 games in this series have been decided by 1 point, 1 point, and 3 points, and Penn State can move the football. Listen, Penn State ranks top 15 in scoring and scoring defense and scoring offense. So does Ohio State, and Ohio State's better, but I'm getting 19 points. Also, Penn State 2-1 against ranked teams this year. Ohio State goes to Michigan next week. Guess what? They struggle every year before the Michigan game. Penn State's got a good coach. They've got weapons on the outside. This is a James Franklin's a world-class recruiter. Ohio State's a better team, but 19 points is a huge number. Penn State covers. Ohio State wins at 33-23.
Michigan at Indiana.
I'm going to take Indiana plus 9.5. Wouldn't be shocked if they won the game, but I'm going to take the points here. I'm betting the number. Michigan again. Before they play Ohio State the last 12 years, Michigan has been 4-8 against the spread. Indiana's got a real offense here, folks. In fact, if you look at the numbers, points per game, total yards, yards per play, Indiana's better in all 3. Okay, they've scored 27 or more in 6 straight games. Again, if you just look at numbers, Indiana can go toe-to-toe offensively and score. And I think this, to them, is their bowl game. I think Michigan wins it, has to come from behind to do so, 27-23. But I'll take the 9.5 with the Hoosiers, a legitimate move-the-ball offense.
UCLA and USC.
USC, I'll take them. I'll swallow the 14. They have dominated this series, have the Trojans at the Coliseum, winning 9 of 10 at the Coliseum and 8 by double digits. UCLA, 3-17 in their last 20 roadies, 0-3 against teams currently ranked. They're a one-dimensional offense. Bruins can't throw the ball, and USC can still win the Pac-12 South. This is USC's last game potentially under Clay Helton. Will they play to fight for his job? They don't play next week. So are they playing to win the Pac-12? Are they playing to save Clay Helton's job? By the way, when they don't lose the turnover battle at home, USC wins their games and they win them big. I think USC rolls over a completely rebuilding UCLA roster, 36-16. Tomorrow I'll have my Blazing Five, so excited for that.